Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Of a miracle, whose blood will flow like water to nourish prophet's crop. Somewhere near the edge of a miracle, who's gonna feed on sugar and junk, a hungry mouth will eat anything. Edge of America, somewhere near the edge of America, whose sister is a battered woman, better by a better man. Today than yesterday, don't even want to think about tomorrow. Edge of America, edge of America.
Anishinaabe, singer-songwriter Annie Humphrey's title song from her CD, Edge of America, from Macoshe Music. I chose that song, Edge of America, as a descriptive voice for many of the social and economic concerns we hear Yakutishi Native Center worry about. Issues of poverty, of racial discrimination, environmental justice, health care, human rights, and many other issues poor people and people of color must deal with every day as we struggle to live on the edge of America. This is why Yakutishi Native Center has been working for years in community organizing and intertribal and multicultural coalition building. We believe in the innate dignity and diversity of all peoples. We are dedicated to promoting the eradication of all forms of prejudice, violence, discrimination, hatred, racism, and globalization. Yakutishi Native Center encourages active participation in educating all peoples toward the development of a more inclusive and respectful world community. One of the gifts of doing this earth justice work is meeting very fine people who share these concerns and visions as well. In today's program, Wolf Mountain Radio is honored to introduce you to two such persons, Noelia and Robert Rodriguez. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yakutishi Native Center. Ashkwe greetings. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio on Honoring Mother Earth's Indigenous Voices, Global Radio for Peace International. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. I'm here in our studio on a very beautiful afternoon, and this is the time that the sun is getting ready to set. And earlier I saw some swallowtail kites flying around outside the studio window, So I knew it was going to be a very nice and special day. In the studio, I have two guests, and as is the custom of Wolf Mountain Native Radio, I always prefer to have them introduce themselves so they are represented in the way they are most comfortable with. I will just mention that their names is Noelia and her husband, Robert. And perhaps as a brief comment, they live here in what is now called Southwest Florida, as we do, in what Seminole Miccosukee call this homeland, Pahayogi. And how I know them is from my participation and involvement in a number of Southwest Florida peace and environmental justice concerns. And that's about all I will say and let them introduce themselves. So we say, Ashkwe, greetings, welcome, and thank you for being on Wolf Mountain Native Radio. And let me just pass the microphone over to you, Robert.
Hi, I'm Robert. I was born in Florida, in fact. My chief interest, I guess I could say, includes health and nutrition. I think like many others who develop an interest in those topics, it can be something that evolves slowly or something that one realizes all of a sudden based on an experience or an event or even a crisis. In my case and in Noelia's case, I guess, we originally were interested in nutrition and related topics based on health concerns, optimizing one's health. I think, though, over the years that the progress we made in terms of what we eat, how we think of health, expanded from there to a realization of where our food comes from, who produces it, how do they produce it, how is food marketed around the world, and eventually evolved into a more ethical point of view, which is that anything related to food, as much as related to land and air and sea and forest, and especially as relates to oneself, all has an ethical component. And when one develops that ethical component and brings it back to those issues of health, then I think one creates a very useful circle that encourages, provides a point of view that is more comprehensive than just looking at those issues very abstractly.
My name is Noelia, and ever since I can remember, I've been interested in the food one eats and whether it's organic and whether one eats animals or not. Initially, we became interested in vegetarianism for health reasons, but as time passed, we developed such a love for other beings and animals that I just cannot conceive nowadays that I would kill an animal to eat it, especially that there's so much food readily available in our Western society in modern times today. And there's no need to kill animals, and let alone to do factory farming of animals where the animals are suffering so much and being abused and given all kinds of chemicals and hormones. It just saddens me tremendously to feel that I'm going to make another sentient being suffer if I was to eat them, that I would make another sentient being go through so much suffering when I really don't need to eat them, and when in reality, according to a lot of my research, one actually is healthier if one doesn't eat animals, because animals have a lot of saturated fat. And us as humans do not need to consume any saturated fat or cholesterol. In fact, our livers produce all the cholesterol that we need to process the hormones of the body. So our bodies have absolutely no need of saturated fat or cholesterol. And it becomes a great burden. And then in our society today, you see why most people over 50 have to take drugs to reduce their cholesterol, when it could actually be done so well and so readily by just not consuming animal products. And for example, when we used to consume like cheese and eggs, which we were not vegan then, we were vegetarian but not vegan, at the time my cholesterol was like 217. I never overate. It was just from eating eggs occasionally and cheese and so forth. After we became vegans, and that is, vegan means that one eats, well, technically means that one eats a plant-based diet, no animal products whatsoever. Well, after we became vegan 10 years ago, my cholesterol and that of my husband have been on the 140 to 150 level, which, according to a lot of research, that's the ideal level of cholesterol. In fact, in Massachusetts, there was a study done many years ago, and the study went on for like 30 or 40 years. Can't recall now the name of the study, but it's a famous one, and it's cited by many scientists, and it's cited in the book of John Robbins, Diet for a New American Food Revolution also. In this study, no one who had a cholesterol level of 150 or less ever suffered a heart attack, even under the most strenuous conditions. And there have been studies too, like in Germany, when the bombing that there was in World War II, that there was such tremendous suffering and stress, and they found that actually there were fewer heart attacks than in normal times. And the reason, it appears to be because people were not consuming animal products, and they actually had less cholesterol in their blood system.
Noelia, I'm glad you mentioned the book by Mr. Robbins, and I just had the pleasure of viewing the videotape you let me borrow, entitled Diet for New America, which features Mr. Robbins' I think very fine biological and even moral viewpoints on trying to move to a more sustainable agricultural system, not only in what's now called North America, but throughout the world. And certainly this is a subject matter that many indigenous peoples are very much concerned about. Even as a boy growing up in my rural homeland, I remember a time when my Wabanaki people, we all had organic gardens. I remember a time when I could take a cup and drink water from almost any stream in what is now called the state of Maine, our Wabanaki territory, before the pesticides started to invade our beautiful wild blueberry barrens and cranberry bogs. We were very agriculturally food self-sufficient. But now, because of pollution in particular, that's really not possible. But one of the things that Mr. Robbins in that video talked about was the role of corporate agriculture. And it's very scary to me because, especially indigenous peoples around the world, we consider a lot of agribusiness as really a new wave of colonialism. We even call it biopiracy, because it's getting to the point now where some of the big companies like Monsanto and Archer Daniels Midland and others, and this is not really new news for many of our listeners, by the way. We've covered this subject before, and I'm going to ask you to comment on it. But what the point I'm making is, especially for people who want to try to grow healthy, nutritious food, organic farmers, those of us in the indigenous community around the world who want to maintain the use of our traditional seed sources, we are facing serious political and economic laws that are trying to shut that down. And in fact, the role of corporate agribusiness or multinational corporations is really trying to do away with any small-scale rural village farming system and to expand what in English is called plantations or monocultures, large-scale corporate agribusiness. Would you both talk a little bit about what I think is the real threat to world food self-sufficiency, and that is the role of multinational agribusiness and perhaps even the complicity of many of the governments that work in partnership with these huge projects and policies.
Well, historically, imperial and colonial powers have always wanted to limit the areas that they exploited to particular crops that they could control for their own market. One could think of tea in India, or chocolate from Africa. One would think that with the rhetoric of free trade that was going to disappear. But of course, all it's done is to allow the same corporations that work on behalf of those traditional imperial powers to expand their control of the economy, not only for their own purpose, that's accelerating with the specialized markets that have to compete with one another, especially with Asian and European. And the most nefarious development would be genetically modified foods that hold a promise to those traditional economies of being able to develop more efficient or lucrative foods for themselves, supposedly to curtail hunger. For example, rice that would be twice as efficient in planting, that would eliminate needs for pesticides because they're built in. The main offshoot of all that is that those farmers become dependent on purchasing seed from corporations like Monsanto, and would therefore be trapped in a way that one could say perhaps historically, even though it was certainly not benign, but the colonial powers of historically didn't go that far, if only because the technology did not exist. So it's a development of science and technology specifically not to help the economic plight of countries around the world, but to further exploit them. And the logic is no longer that of feeding people. As earlier mentioned, there's plenty of food, and it can be done so efficiently, even in an organic mode, which isn't even being attempted. But there's an overabundance of food in the developed world, and the last market to tap and overcome is basically that of the rest of the world, to make them food dependent, if not economically dependent as well.
Ask Noelia to share any of her thoughts. I wanted to also add to this conversation that, from my point of view, perhaps the scientists who were working in what's now called the Green Revolution technology back in the early 60s and 70s, like Dr. Boglin with the International Rice Research Institute and others who developed these international agricultural institutes all over the world, maybe meant well, but I really believe that the corporate and government people who sponsored it and financed that so-called Green Revolution had very ulterior motives that were for greed and for profit. I really think that a large number of so-called agricultural and rural development schemes, especially in the so-called third world, were really done in the name of agricultural development and eradicating poverty and world hunger, with nothing more than fancy smoke screens, because many of these so-called development schemes required the building of huge hydroelectric dam projects. Many of our listeners know about the 3 years that I had the honor to help fight the Chico River Dam project in what's now called the Philippines, with the traditional mountain people, the Kalinga and Payao, who were going to be flooded and physically relocated from their sacred ancestral homeland, so that the Philippine government, under the corrupt regime of the Marcoses, with the U.S. Agency for International Development, or I call International Destruction, and the World Bank International Monetary Fund, were going to basically generate all this so-called electricity that would really go more for the mining companies and for further expanding the already egregious logging industry that required further electricity, as well as irrigation to grow more export commodity crops, not even food crops. And so I think it's very important that people always look behind some of the stated reasons in agriculture and rural development, especially when you talk about these schemes. But let me ask Noelia, do you have any further insights into what your husband was sharing?
Yes, I think it's really criminal for corporate multinational corporations such as Monsanto to be pushing genetically modified seeds in the third world, because these farmers will become dependent on purchasing every year the seeds from the multinational corporation. They will not be able to save the seeds from what they grew the previous year for the next year. And that's creates such a dependency on the multinational corporations, and that's exactly what they want to do, to profit from this. And that's not even alluding to the damaging effects on human health of consumption of food grown with genetically modified seeds. It can create allergies, and in my view, those seeds are contaminated with pesticides. It's just horrible for the earth and for the individual human being.
Thank you.
American flute music from a fine young woman flutist. She is Hovaya Edwards of Shoshone Navajo Okanogan Peoples, and this is from her Canyon Records CD entitled Morning Star, and she is one of my favorite up-and-coming traditional young flutists. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kedishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, and we're having a very fine, relaxed afternoon conversation here in the studio with two personal friends and neighbors, Noelia and Robert Rodriguez. Without discussing GMOs, genetically modified organisms, or so-called food crops, just the whole Green Revolution, which requires farmers to adopt so-called scientific ways of farming, means they have to purchase fertilizers, insecticides, and herbicides, and a lot of the varieties that were actually pushed upon them. And again, I saw this firsthand in Southeast Asia in my 3.5 years there with rice, and I saw this firsthand in what's now called Central America, especially in Guatemala, with corn, that many of the so-called scientific varieties were not biologically adapted to the soils, the climate regime, not to mention the cultural ways in which many of the farming systems were done by rural, village, mountain people, tribal people. And the yields per hectare actually, after one or two seasons, greatly declined because, as it turned out, the so-called laboratory promise did not really match up in the fields. And in the Philippines, I know specifically that some of the rice varieties, for example, couldn't stand the type of wind that was very prevalent where I lived in the mountain provinces, and it caused great harm and hardship to a lot of so-called peasant farmers or rural family farmers, in this case many tribal farmers, that really were forced by government policy to stop using their traditional system of agriculture and so-called adopt the scientific varieties. And there was a lot of money made because that also necessitated stop using water buffalo, for example, for plowing the fields, and they would have to purchase a gasoline-powered tractor. And many of these things were not, quote, appropriate technology, but that's my personal comment. I'm going to ask you now to share, honestly, a question I have a concern about. I'm not here to embarrass you. I myself am very much concerned about factory farming and the consumption of animals, especially in North America, that are raised under horrific conditions. You know, this so-called old-style idea of the idyllic American family farm where pigs and chickens were allowed plenty of room to walk around and were taken care of almost like house pets is certainly not the case anymore, if it ever was so. I mean, we have these incredible huge agribusiness pens where hogs, for example, can't move around, and where chickens get their beak cut off, and just incredible cruelty. I mean, if I was someone from another planet looking down upon this, I really couldn't see how people would call themselves civilized. So I'm obviously learning myself to question the American animal industry. However, I will say, and this is my question, I'm asking it in a long way here, as a Native American person, I grew up in a culture where part of our life depended upon hunting and fishing. And in our way of life, for example, as a young boy and even into my teenage years, my family depended upon, say, being able to have a moose for the winter. Now, if you people know anything about Eastern Woodland Native culture, the hunting of moose is a very spiritual and ceremonial way of life, and not anyone just goes out with a rifle and shoots at something in the forest. It is done through prayer and ceremony and through the guidance and authority of the clan mothers and our elders, and all the parts of the animal are used in a respectful way. Every part of it is shared. Personally speaking, I grew up, like I said, as someone that lived from moose, as example, and therefore we are meat eaters. I know I have other Native relatives out west, people who call them macaw, as example, and their culture is based on marine mammals like whales. And again, even if you talk to a macaw person, they're not advocating whole-scale whaling, but they are advocating the Aboriginal right of being able to hunt one whale a year, to maintain their cultural, spiritual connection and to have that part of their culture. Are you against the hunting of animals by indigenous peoples?
Well, we know a lot of the anthropology of hunter peoples historically, related closely to shepherds as well. One could look at the Old Testament of the Bible and see that the Hebrews were shepherds. Definitely the consumption of animals in the context of traditional peoples amounts to, I wouldn't know the figure, but it must be minuscule.
Yes.
Compared to the factory farming industry. Even in say the United States and a century ago, we know that the consumption of animals was directly related to the income and status of people. So in the United States, we've seen an enormous increase in demand for factory farmed animals, probably because we've seen an enormous increase in the wealth of the United States vis-a-vis the rest of the world. In the case of anyone who would be what we might call a typical citizen in the United States or developed country who does not have any particular historical tie to any particular peoples, because the European and North American Caucasians are pretty much sharing the same values of the last at least 500, if not 2,000 years. It would not occur to them to think of the consumption of animals as something related to the earth, related to the forest, related to an entire cycle of nature. Every historical hunter and shepherd peoples has realized that the animals that they consume were in a sense part of themselves, and they were becoming a part of that animal.
Yes.
And hoping that at the end of the season that animal would come back in the spring through its fellows. I remember Joseph Campbell mentioning that a lot in his study of mythology, and seeing in that a core of actually the respect that those traditional peoples had for nature, their realization that what they consumed they were responsible for, and had to, through their religious or spiritual practices, would be assuring the return of those creatures. None of that exists today, for example, in factory farming. It's a ruthless kind of holocaust. There's no interest whatsoever in thinking of it as related to nature and related to natural cycles at all. The animals are seen as objects. They are not even seen as living beings. Their suffering, the cruelty that's inflicted on them, is not seen as relevant. And I think part of it may be because the traditional biblical thinking has never thought of animals as having a soul.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could make any other similar analogies and just seeing animals as sharing life, as being sentient beings, means that they do have something in common with us, whether one would want to call it a soul or something else. So I think the peoples who traditionally had a strong place for an animal in their cultural ritual have done more to conserve nature and the environment, and more to respect nature and animals than certainly the Western and European and Anglo-American culture of today. There's plenty of work to be done in identifying the corporate and cultural sources of factory farming and destruction of the environment. Native peoples that partake of their tradition consistently would hardly be affecting that cycle at all.
Thank you, sir. I agree with you, and that was my point, that when it comes to American corporate agribusiness or so-called factory farming, livestock, cattle ranches that are huge operations and conglomerates, I'm really opposed to that and question that. I just wanted to make the point that there are still, throughout the world, indigenous peoples who try to honor our traditional way of life and are only able to subsist from hunting and fishing, and for example, the Gwich Inn in what's now called Arctic Village, where the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge oil fiasco under Bush Cheney administration, or I call it regime, wants to destroy that by opening up for oil and gas drilling. The Gwich Inn depend upon being able to hunt caribou as their subsistence way of life, as my ancestors and even some of my people who have not been so-called educated, unquote, still depend upon hunting deer and moose where I come from, and there are many examples that I'm talking about with Native people, and I just wanted to ask you that, because sometimes I consider myself an animal rights activist, but I've met some animal rights people that won't even respect the fact that there are land-based cultures that have for millennia lived in balance with Mother Earth and the animal and plant and fish relations, and some of these people come from cities and, you know, really don't have respect that we indigenous peoples do have aboriginal historical right to continue our way of life.
In the beginning, when they first set foot on our land, they said, "Help me, for I am a starving man." So we helped them, and the whole world knows how we were repaid. They killed some of our people every day. Now you can hear some of them say that we did not matter anyway. Or worse, farther down the road, in the beginning, when our water was so pure you could drink it, and you didn't run coast to coast a stinking, when you drank it, it didn't get you thinking about death from what you are drinking. Maybe death from what you are thinking, or worse, farther down, maybe death from what you are thinking, or worse, farther down the road. In the beginning, when our air was so pure you could breathe, when the eagle flew high above the tree, and we did not have to say please against chemicals killing you and me. Acid rain killing all the trees. Acid rain killing you and me. Or worse, farther down the road. In the beginning, when our government was small and almost honest, to all of the people was this promise that they would always be honest. But we all know that they broke their promise, 'cause we all know that they are dishonest. water down the road. In the beginning, before they talked of New World Order, before they wanted to change the borders, they want to run the world from Europe, and they won't even give us a stirrup to ride this wild white Mustang we must ride. To ride this wild white Mustang we must ride. Somehow we must do it with pride. Or worse, farther down the road. Or worse, farther down the road. Or worse, farther down the road.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing native peoples throughout the world with native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Music from the Powwow Drum Red Bull from their Turtle Island Music CD entitled On the Road Again. And before that song, we heard my friend Anishinaabe singer-songwriter Richard Sears' Ride the White Stallion, a rendition of some of our 512 years of history between our indigenous peoples of Turtle Island and the people from across the waters. The newcomers, we say, Wampisikutonk in my language. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. I really want to thank our guests, Noelia and Robert Rodriguez, for their time today. Please stay tuned next week, where we will continue with our conversation with these two fine friends of ours, Noelia and Robert. Before we go, I want to make a brief announcement about two very fine films we recently saw at a national film festival. The first one is entitled Black Cloud. It's a 93-minute release, and it was directed by Ricky Schroeder. Black Cloud is a journey through the passions of a young Diné Navajo who, in the search for his identity, discovers his true self, his destiny, and his dreams. It's a beautiful, inspirational story about a young American Indian who overcomes personal challenges as he comes to terms with his heritage while fighting the way for a spot on the U.S. Olympic boxing team. He brings us closer to understanding the wonders of beauty, honor, and tradition, and the trials we face in poverty, darkness, and fear. At every turn, you find hope and inspiration in Black Cloud, who feels alone in his world and is troubled by his uncertain ancestry, and his future is unfolding without direction. The only thing of which he is certain is his passion for fighting. Fortunately for Black Cloud, he has more than a spiritual guide on his journeys. That's a very excellent movie that was directed and screenplay by Ricky Schroeder. And another fine film that I highly recommend to keep your eyes and ears open for is a film from Canada. It's entitled The Snow Walker, director Charles Martin Smith, his screenplay Charles Martin Smith. And the plot is basically the following. It's the summer of 1953, and bush pilot Charlie Halliday, a brash ladies' man and war veteran, is flying a routine job in the Queen Maud Gulf on the Arctic Ocean when he encounters a small band of Inuit peoples who plead for his help. They are traveling with a sick young woman and want Halliday to fly her to a hospital. At first, he refuses, but when they offer him a bribe, he reluctantly agrees. During the flight, the aircraft is engine suddenly explodes and the plane nosedives towards certain death before Halliday can pull her up. The plane comes crashing down only yards from shore. Though miraculously surviving the crash, Halliday is overwhelmed with a sense of doom when he finds they are stranded hundreds of miles from civilization on the rugged and barren Arctic tundra with a broken radio and only a handful of supplies. And it's just an incredible fine movie, and the Inuit woman Annabella Pagaduk is an incredible young actress. So again, I urge you to keep your eyes and ears out for the movie The Snow Walker from Canada from director Charles Martin Smith, as well as Black Cloud from director Ricky Schroeder, and that's a United States production. Well, dear friends, we're going to conclude today's program with a listener request song, and this, of course, is Chester Knight from Sound of America Records. The request is to hear the song Cochise Was a Warrior. Well, until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio program, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinan Wantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Mochis was a warrior, a soldier of the earth. The old ones tell the story of the day of his birth. History calls him a renegade, a killer and a cheat. His fight for freedom led to his defeat. I am only one man, but my people beaten down, trying hard to stay strong inside this skin so brown. But I still hear the voices of the heroes of the past, whispering so softly in the silence of the past. Hear me call, hear me call, hear me call, hear me call. Stand strong, never fall. You can count on me, you can count on me. We must rise, standing our way. You can count on me, you can count on me. You can count on me, you can count on me. You can count on me, you must rise, standing our way. Here's a call to everyone who ever felt shame, or took that wintry midnight walk that nearly killed the flame. Courage, all my brothers, find that spirit voice that calls you back to freedom. It's time to make a choice. Hear me call, hear me call, hear me call. You can count on me, you must rise.